Recording. Lovely. Okay, welcome to our audit committee at Charnwood Borough Council. As ever, the meeting's recorded and it will be available on the website, so please switch on when you're speaking and speak into the microphones and remember to switch them off afterwards. We didn't do that very well last time, did we? Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and it's outside the council's control. But people wishing to do so should do so in a way that doesn't disrupt any of the business of the meeting. And please could you put your phones onto silent or turn them off to make sure we're not distracted. And also, if you've got smart speakers, lose Alexa, Siri, Cortana, as they may record conversations and we could be in breach of GDPR. Okay, and also we've got a time limit of 2.5 hours. Looking at the agenda, I don't think we're going to be anywhere near that today. But at that point, if we are, then we can vote on whether to extend it by half an hour, but only to finish considering the item that we're on. Okay, so if we move on to item one, which is apologies. We received apologies from Councillor Simon Bradshaw, Councillor Hunt, is substituting, yep, and also from Councillor David Snart, Councillor Charles is substituting. Okay, thank you. Hopefully we'll be finished by then anyhow. Yes, then you can both go.
Through you, Chair, we also have an apology from Councillor Bolton.
Thank you. Okay, if we move on to the next point, the minutes of the previous meeting. I'm grateful if you could confirm by a show of hands that you're happy to receive and note the minutes. Oh, questions? Okay.
Sorry about that. It's unusual to ask a question on the minutes. Two points, really. On the agenda, minute item 15, the appendix, it's not terribly good or clear to me because there's no headings on that first table of numbers. So there's just a table of numbers there that says the GF budget and no breakdown of what any of those individual numbers means. So, you know, it seemed a bit odd to me that the reference made to it is a detailed report of the slippage, and there's very little detail there, particularly on the front piece. I recognise there's a couple of slippage pieces on the back, but that table just is meaningless. Summary capital budget 2020 general fund is just a whole row of numbers, a list of numbers with no titles about what any of those numbers mean. 25 million, 4.8 million, 2 million, 15 million, 5, nothing. So I'm slightly concerned about that. On the minutes of the confidential item, and I'm not going to breach any confidentiality here, so don't panic, it was resolved that future reports show purchase prices of properties, and I don't think that's shown in this report this time. I'm just slightly concerned on the minutes that we've just got to sharpen up on the actions carrying over to appropriate bits and pieces, and the detail that's shown on item on page 15 is not a level I would have expected. It's just my observations on that, so I will support the minutes, but I just want to observe on those two items and have it minuted. I don't love either of those two pieces there. There's no detail in what says it's a detailed report. And on the other piece, I don't think prices, which was an action resolved in the minutes of the previous meeting on the confidential item, I don't think that's shown in the confidential report this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anybody responding? Okay, so it's noted and hopefully it will be resolved next time. Okay, so item three, it's one of those words I can't say, I'm afraid. Disclosures of interests. Does anybody here have any interest to declare? No, lovely. Okay. Item four, questions under other committee procedures, there were no questions submitted. And then on to item 5, internal audit progress report. So if I could hand over to you, Lisa, to present the report.
Thank you, Chair. The progress report takes us up to the 10th of September, so I'll just point out now I am able to provide a verbal update in some events that have happened since then, particularly in relation to the team update on page 23, so I'll come on to those later. I'll just quickly run through some of the points to note from the report. And 6 final audit reports have been issued in the period since the last update report to committee. 3 of those related to the 2021 audit plan and concluded the work on last year's plan, and there's 3 to date for the current year, 21-22. The status of the current year's plan is included at Appendix A. No concerns in relation to us working through the plan at this point, and the executive summaries of the reports issued are all included at Appendix B. As you'll see, we were only able to give limited assurance to the asset management and risk management audits. You should all have received the full reports. So the areas identified for improvement are just summarised in paragraph 2.2 on page 22. Unfortunately, Justin and Helen were unable to attend tonight, and Simon said he may be able to assist with some of the questions. And Kerry was involved in both of the audits, so it just depends really on the nature of the questions, and if they're unable to be answered between Simon or Kerry, then they'll come back to you. A number of overdue recommendations are set out in Appendix C. It does look to be a lot, but members may recall that the majority of our audit reports were the majority of our audit reports for last year were issued post-January, so it does skew it somewhat. Various reasons for the slippage and the recommendations are at a range of stages, so they're set out for you in that comments column on the appendix. I'm not unduly concerned at this time, and I would expect to see quite a lot of those falling off by the next committee meeting. I've reviewed and updated the internal audit charter. That's an annual exercise that I need to carry out. A small number of minor amendments is detailed on page 23, and the full charter is included at Appendix F for your information. So as mentioned at the outset, I am able to give a verbal update on the team changes. As you'll see in the report, I'll be leaving Northwest in the next couple of weeks. And actually, Kerry was successful in being offered and accepting the audit manager position, so she'll take that on when I leave. A recruitment exercise to fill Kerry's senior auditor position should start very soon, and temporary resources will be sought to fill any longer-term gap. We don't expect any disruption to the delivery of the audit plan. So I think that's the key message at this point in time. We expect to be able to manage the change in the team. Happy to take any questions on the report.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. I think, first of all, we'll express our congratulations to Kerry from all of us. Well done. I'm going to go around and see if there's any questions. I do have a few, though, so shall I start with mine first, is that okay? Reading through it, first of all, I did note that throughout a lot of the audits, policies and procedures and training seem to be a common issue as to part of the problem throughout a lot of the audits, which is obviously a concern. I mean, for example, the money laundering one as well, the officer. There wasn't a money laundering policy, which I was quite surprised about. I believe you can tell me about that, though, Simon.
Yeah, there wasn't a money laundering policy, so I will just observe that it's good practice. It is not a requirement on the council to have a money laundering policy, but we will be putting one in place. I think in reality we're it's not a requirement, so the regulations no longer cover local authorities, because essentially it's a fairly limited risk for local authorities. So the main areas of risk would be our sort of legal and financial services type transactions, so accountants and solicitors. So that's those individual professions would have those areas covered. And then our main area actually is in the is in property transactions. So if, particularly if we were to sell a property to some unknown participant, that would be the risk. So it is a risk that does exist for the council, but it is fairly small. And as it happens, a policy has been drafted, but the challenges around guidelines and procedures which we have to develop, and in particular what level of training is going to be appropriate, because I don't personally believe it will be appropriate across the council, but no doubt some awareness will be necessary for staff working in those sort of more riskier areas around property principally, but also within the finance team. So I think the audit recommendations are that will be done by the end of October, and that's what we're targeting at the moment.
Thanks, Simon. Okay, I'll move on to my next query. Sorry. On page 30, you talk about a cleansing exercise and the issue about leavers not being taken off the system. And what I want to ask about that is, actually, is this an IT issue or a HR issue? And should it be included as part of the standard leavers guidance when somebody leaves, that some check is done to make sure that they are then taken off all systems?
They have got a process in place for leavers, but we've picked up that it hasn't worked all the time, and therefore the recommendation's there for them to tighten it up. But it's also good practice, because we have to think about the movers within the authority as well. That's sometimes where they miss those things out, because you don't always get informed. Putting things in place for that.
Thank you. It's just an issue that's come up previously that I've been aware of.
Yeah, I suppose I would just add with this one, this related to the housing system in particular, wasn't it, this one, rather than the network access for the authority as a whole. So it was particular. I must just note that that recommendation particularly was focused on the housing system.
Thank you. My next query is around, so we've got a few audits around kind of housing areas, and I know from past experience that this is often an area that is quite strongly associated with complaints to the council, and I've been surprised that there hasn't been any links through the audit committee with this. Two complaints in terms of the number of complaints received about this area. If we're picking up weaknesses, is that kind of indicative of the complaints that we have in this area, for example? And that might be something for us to consider as an audit committee in a wider aspect, I think, as well.
I suppose with complaints, we do review them if there's particular issues there in particular services, not necessarily routinely, because we do expect those to be picked up through the performance management side of authorities and through the quarterly review of performance that goes to other committees. So we do consider it, but we it isn't the key focus of our audit, I guess.
Yeah, because I know, Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. I think from memory, and I think you're absolutely right that tenancy management and housing is one of the areas where the council does get a number of complaints. From memory, the previous performance scrutiny committee was receiving monitoring reports on tenancy-related complaints for a while, but my memory's failing, unfortunately. I assume that they decided that they were satisfied that there were no patterns or concerns that they wanted to monitor, so they stopped receiving that information. But if the audit committee wanted scrutiny to have a think again about whether they wanted to monitor complaints, numbers and reasons at some sort of high strategic level. That's something the committee could definitely either informally or more formally ask the Scrutiny Commission to have a think about, if you wish to, Chair.
Keith, sorry, Nikki, did you put your hand up? What does everybody feel about that on the Audit Committee? Any comments?
Thank you, Chair. I think the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee does monitor those variables, I think. So I think we tend to pick that up, but obviously if Audit wishes to have it in any greater detail, then I'm sure that can be available.
Okay, I think obviously the Audit Committee might want to know if there's any risks involved in that, if there's any issues there. Presumably that would go to the risk register anyhow. Okay, thank you. Just a comment from seeing previous kind of my experience. Okay, the audit on asset management as well, I'm presuming, he's not here, but that probably will be picked up, some of that by external audit, some of the issues on that. Potentially, they have been looking in detail at assets this year in other councils.
I would say it's, for the internal audit, a lot of it is around the strategy and the guidelines and sticking to those that are the issues that we've picked up.
Okay, thank you. So that linked with my earlier point then. Okay, moving on, sorry. On page 42, we have an outstanding recommendation, which kind of, when I read it, it concerned me a little about the gas servicing contract monitoring that the recently appointed compliance gas inspector surveyor has resigned. And I'm wondering, because of that, is this still sitting on a medium, or could it potentially go up if we're having a problem in this area? And does that maybe need reviewing on an ongoing basis?
I don't think the fact that a compliance gas inspector survey has resigned, the actual recommendation relates to the reconciliation between different systems. They have got processes in place, they are working towards it. I think it's just that short-term unexpected thing that had happened that's delayed it.
Okay, thank you. That's all my questions. Does anybody else?
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got two questions, if that's okay. The first one is on the limited assurance points. And we're not starting here from a standing start, if you see what I mean. So the things that are needing to be created, need to be documented, all that kind of thing that were brought up in those limited assurances were already happening in previous years. So has there been anything identified that would enable those things to be done before the audit occurred in future, so that we then didn't get limited assurances on those points?
It is down to the section to make sure that they do have their things in place. If they put in place that they're going to update their policy on an annual basis, then it is their responsibility to do it. If we then come to the audit, they're fully aware of what we're looking at the start of it.
Right, OK, thank you. Is there anything else that could be said from officers, perhaps, on that point?
Sorry, I think if I may, Chair. Internal audits don't surprise people. So they are planned at least several months in advance, normally, if not 12 months in advance, and there are very early discussions that go on with directors and heads of service about what should be in next year's internal audit plan. So senior managers should be aware that an audit of a particular area is in the pipeline, and certainly if I was a senior manager expecting an audit of one of my service responsibilities, I would be checking myself that there was nothing obvious missing before the internal auditors turned up on the doorstep. So, I mean, we can remind managers again, I think maybe when the annual internal audit plan is approved, of what's coming up, and they may wish to look at policies, procedures and training in the areas that are going to be subject to audit, so they're not caught out. But to be honest, I would have expected they would do that anyway, Chair.
Thank you very much indeed. Can I ask my second question then, please? On the pages you were just referring to a moment ago, Chair, pages 42, 43 and so on, there's quite a lot of slippages on the dates. Is there any kind of checking or repercussion? I don't mean in a nasty way. I mean in a, you know, making sure these things are done in a timely fashion. Is there anything that happens currently within the council, please?
There is an escalation process in place whereby when we're checking out, when we're doing the recommendations, if things aren't being implemented, or there's no movement on the implementation of the recommendation, then it will be escalated up to the directors.
Please also remember that you could ask them to come into the audit committee if necessary, and I'm sure we would all give our full support to that if required. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, Chair. I notice on page 37 that some members haven't been attending, or some members that are on scrutiny should have been attending training sessions to enable them to scrutinise the commercial property project properly. And I recall that an email was sent out recently asking for members to attend, and it would be helpful to know whether they've any responses have been received and members have taken up the training.
I think, Chair, that's something we can look at outside the meeting. We don't think any of us have an answer here and now. So if we could get back to you on that one, that would be okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll go through in page order. So first one is just page 25, 26, Appendix A, 24, 25, I should say. Can I just remind myself that that's the totality of this year's audit plan and the total number of days? Or is this the number of planned days to 21st September?
That's the totality for this year, yeah.
Just need refreshing, remind members to make sure whether we're happy or not. And I think we had part of this discussion as members served. But for completeness, I checked the 2021 audit, internal audit, and I think that was 326 planned days that I counted in the 2021 audit plan. And on here, we've got 182. So that's a very significant difference in the 2021 work plan from the September 2020 meeting, as memory serves me, that I checked today, as opposed to this one. Just in terms of the totality of the work plan. So I just want to check on that.
Yeah, that's the starting point, and you would have seen when the report came to committee, the plan report that came to committee in February or March for this committee for Charnwood. That is the starting point, but obviously there's deductions from there in terms of time spent at committee, management days, having to put reports together. So that ends up coming down quite significantly to usually around about 200 days. What isn't reflected here is that there was also some contingency. So all of that, I would say if you're trying to do that comparison, your best bet is to refer to the audit plan report. This is just an update on the detailed audits that are planned each year. So if you wanted to do that level of comparison, if you go back to the February or March report that came on the annual plan, that splits out where all the days go as that starting of the 300 available days. They're not necessarily going to be audits on directed audit days. There's also time in there for ad hoc advisory work that we do, attending other meetings that we do. So it's not the direct comparison unless you look at the plan in that way. What you will also see is that this is intended to be a movable live document throughout the year as we add audits onto it and remove them depending on the changing risk scenarios throughout the year. So there'll be new things added onto here, or there'll be maybe audits that come off. So it does fluctuate during the year. It's not going to be identical, and it shouldn't be, in line with the public sector internal audit standards. This plan is supposed to change to be delivering a truly risk-based internal audit service.
The reason I ask, and I will check the figures, and I will go back and check to try and put like for like. As members here know and others know, it is my habit to go and check like for like reports and intermediaries. I just want to make sure that I'm not living in a world where I feel and sense our level of internal audit. I think I'm the only person here, rightly, that's been here now for 5 years, I think, on the audit committee. And I have that sort of uneasy sense that our level of... Our level of audit, my sense of unease...
The number of days has dropped. So when the Charnwood joined the internal audit shared service, yeah, it did drop, and that was acknowledged as being a shared service splitting myself. You had a full-time audit manager. They had some other duties, but you did have a bigger internal audit team prior to joining the shared service. But it hasn't changed since last year, since you've been part of the shared service. But prior to that, yes, it has.
Thank you for that. Moving on through the reports, I can just turn the pages to my own notes. Mira?
Sorry.
On page... 34, and I'm on the asset management limited assurance piece, to which I just have a couple of questions. The first one, a lot of the report links back to the production of the asset management strategy, and I think, you know, we at various times in various parts of the council we've talked about assets, asset lists, asset management, making that work better for us, understanding it better. So one has to hope the strategy will do that, give us a starting point. Are there landmarks along the way between now and April 22 that we can know how progress is going?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know the detail of that. So these are recommendations that have been agreed by Justin Henry, who unfortunately is not able to be with us. What I would expect is that this would come to a cabinet report, so the next indication that this should be on its way will be a cabinet report that will be scheduled in due course. So to be in place for April, I would be expecting a cabinet report in February or March, but I'm afraid I don't know quite what the milestones would be or what Justin had in mind in terms of the timing of that work.
The rationale behind the question is I want to make sure that I'm not sitting looking at an April, June, October slippage process on something that seems to me relatively important. So let's try and follow that one through and track that as we go through the meeting cycle. And the next point then on page 35, I'm obviously always slightly concerned and just want to understand a bit better when a recommendation of the auditor is not agreed by the SLT, management, department, etc. So point 8... where it says this recommendation is not agreed, as this will be managed by SLT, it's part of the capital programme. So the members and officers here will know I take as keen an interest in the accounts as I can and understanding the nuances about that, and I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But I want to make sure that that's not lost between SLT heading off in one direction with the capital strategy and then the capital updates, and then how that's blended into the asset management and how we pull those two together, because it's always a concern when something's not agreed with the audit with the auditors, and I want to understand and know the rationale and be comfortable with that.
So basically, SLT is the four directors of the council, one of whom is Justin Henry, who is also responsible for asset management. So really what we're saying here, or what SLT was saying, is we would like the responsibilities that would have been undertaken by an asset management group to be undertaken by SLT, because as SLT we felt that we wanted the visibility of this whole topic. And I think one thing from a management team that we have felt in the past is that it was undertaken by a separate group, but maybe as a senior management team we didn't have necessarily the visibility we wanted. So what we're actually saying is we would like, SLT believe this is of sufficient importance to merit direct reporting to SLT, who will undertake the duties of the asset management group.
Does that not give rise for the opportunity for SLT to disagree with the person holding the portfolio and holding the budget?
The person who holds the budget ultimately is a member of SLT, so it's a discussion we would have. So I think in practice it's probably unlikely, but that's something that would be brought out in that forum. Officers don't necessarily always agree on the way forward, but the person who represents the portfolio is a member of SLT and has obviously full speaking and participation rights in discussions that take place. In practice, of course, Justin is actually our expert and subject matter expert on many areas of this, so we will be looking for him to take the lead and give us the assurance that we want going forward. But it is a very large area, the asset management, so we've got quite a lot of expenditure on buildings like this, and of course one of the key things that we're looking at is our overall accommodation at Southfield. So for that reason, assets has a high profile within the senior management team at the moment, and hence the desire for us to discuss it at that level.
Can just take one tiny step further then. So if there were disagreement, and I understand sort of corporate unity, and once the decision's made, we all get back in the boat and row in the right direction together. But would it be made clear in terms of audit committee holding anyone accountable or asking the question whether there was ever disagreement between the portfolio holder and SLT, even though the member is on SLT? Because what it would mean is we'd be asking the member to come in here and account for something they hadn't agreed with, although they've got a corporate responsibility.
I think your rowing boat analogy is probably correct, so that having thrashed it out and done the arm wrestling and mud wrestling to actually come up with an agreed strategy, we would expect us to be rowing in the same direction, so we shouldn't really have any disagreement after that process.
Page 40. It's a good learning point, certainly, that I took from that whole internal audit, that it hadn't struck me that we look at the corporate risk register, for example, and we sort of dissect the individual parts of it, and we have audits across individual sections. And it hadn't actually struck me that we actually ought to audit the corporate risk process management, etc. So it's a good learning point, and something hopefully I can carry across to other sections if it's pertinent. I'm sort of highly uncomfortable with point 7, because it seems to me that the management of risk is one of our primary purposes of this committee. So I would be concerned that something that's marked as a high priority for this committee and as a high priority from the audit, and something which I believe is very strongly front and centre in everything we talk about and what we should be saying to you and holding people accountable for, is risk. And then we say, oh, we'll kick that back to May 22, no problem. I'm kind of worried from a committee point of view that that's a pretty high value thing to us in audit, is risk. And it says we're just going to kick it back to 22 and that's fine and no problem. But it seems to me that's a bit more important than that. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had quite a lot of discussion at SLT on this report, actually, and one of the things that was felt actually was that the overall rating of this as limited assurance was pretty harsh, actually, given that the time and effort that we do actually spend internally on risk management. So it does come to SLT and it does come to the corporate leadership team, which is all the heads of service, and we do this on a regular basis. So actually, there is quite a lot of time and effort on risk, and in more recent times, we've specifically looked at it in terms of COVID, which has obviously added which is obviously another dimension to the risks that we've looked after. So I think the view is that, you know, training is something that is useful, helpful, and that we will undertake to do. I think we wouldn't necessarily agree that it was high priority. I think we've agreed to do it. That's been an agreed with the audit team as a response, but I think it's, you know, something we will do. But in the meantime, we are undertaking the risk assessment and review of risk on a regular basis anyway. And, you know, to be fair to us, all those people who are, it's at a senior level, we have got quite a lot of experience of reviewing risks at various times. So that's not to say we shouldn't engage more with it and refresh our training, but I think from a senior management team, we're looking at it as something that it would be very useful to refresh ourselves on, but it's not fundamental in the sense that no one's untrained or inexperienced in looking at this whole process and the whole basis of risk.
In some semblance, I'm in a funny kind of way, I'm quite glad to hear that you're a bit peeved at it, because it's we've got to have some sort of faith in the internal audit, and we've got to have some sort of faith in our officers, and it's the fact that they don't always agree is probably a healthy thing. So I'm relatively pleased to hear that, and it's up to us to make our own judgment by what we see in the reports and how we view that. I think part of the question was as much asked from us, not you, about our training and our ability to do that, and I'm as much concerned about our ability. It was a learning point to me to not be looking at the subsections of things, and the report kind of covered the approach and the thing as a whole, which was something I need to think about in terms of other areas next time we're drawing up internal audit and we're talking about how we, you know, how we question that and challenge the areas that we're going to ask the internal auditors to look at where we do. And that was that's something I've learned and tried to part from. That was kind of a different way of doing it. But I'm as much thinking about us and our ability to work and do that, because we, the committee, anything that's flagged high priority and we kick down the road till May, in our primary function of risk management, I'm concerned.
Can I interject here, maybe? If that's all right. I mean, can I suggest that maybe we take forward and kind of escalate the issue that we are concerned about training and we are concerned about updated policies and procedures, which perhaps shouldn't just be looked at when it's an audit due, but it's something that needs kind of escalating upwards from the audit committee, that we have general concerns around that.
We have the right to fire anything we choose into cabinet, and we've done that before from this committee. We've taken issues to cabinet. As individuals, we can take minute references from the minutes that are produced. If it reflects what we've said, we can ask for that to go. I'm sure you're aware, but you know, we had the last thing we took to cabinet. It might be the underspend. I can't remember what it was that we took to cabinet we were concerned about. Well, we have that right, if we choose, to escalate it to cabinet and insist that we get a response. And we've done that on all the issues before. I do have a general sense over five years, that we're not where I'd like us to be in the rigorous confidence of assurance in the internal audit processes that we've got. Not process, but how well we are, how comfortable we are sitting here.
Sorry, Simon, I interjected that.
Yeah, just I think one thing about this, just a couple of comments really separately. So one is about this audit. I think one thing it is helpful is that we have looked at risk and we're doing it the same way. So maybe actually to force us to look at something in a different way is helpful with risk, so we don't get stale on it and have a different perspective. So I think that is actually a very helpful thing that's come out of this. So that's one thing we'll take forward. Just I'll let the committee form their own judgment on this, but I will observe that a lot of the policies and procedures, they potentially would have been things that would have been done had it not been for COVID. So, you know, I will confess policies and procedures, they tend to be, they're always number four on your list to do. So, it, you know, day-to-day stuff comes forward. But, you know, certainly on the asset management policy, that was something that should have been on the top of Justin's list when he arrived. But he arrived in early summer, I think May or June 2020, just as COVID was starting. And you know, the priorities were really dealing with that, all the stuff around the accommodation and making that work for us. And the other thing, actually, we were fairly time limited in being able to develop our property commercial property portfolio the way the PWLB loan rules were changing. So, just on that one in particular, I think there were probably other priorities that were in front of the development of the strategy at that time. But it's, you know, it's fair enough. That, you know, we can't use that as an excuse forever. So the committee's perfectly validly wanting to look at how that progresses going forward, and that will be the same with a lot of these other things. And you know, it is always one to watch, keeping policies and procedures up to date.
Thank you, Simon. And particularly now we're going back to the new normal, whatever that's going to be, policies and procedures, it's probably a good time to make sure we are reviewing now things have changed yet again. Thank you. Any other points from anybody?
Can I just check with the committee? Are you asking to submit some recommendations to Cabinet then? You're talking about escalating the concerns you have about policies and procedures and training. Yeah, I couldn't remember the last one. So is the committee seeking to escalate that in some manner?
Can we have a...
Maybe Councillor Parsons would be the one to ask if he wanted to do this. To be honest, the last point that was just raised about COVID, I think, should be taken into consideration at this time. However, that's not a time without limit, if you see what I mean. So I think perhaps on the next occasion of the Audit Committee, you might want to consider that point.
I'm happy with that. I didn't come here minded to take anything to Cabinet tonight. It's my general sense of unease, which I've had on varying times over the last year or two, COVID, pre-COVID as well as during, and I continue to not sit here feeling as reassured as I would like to be, which is a key place for us to be here as Audit Committee. We were, I can't remember the right phraseology, when we started this journey 5 years ago, our reassurance level as a committee and for the year was good, and our governance report, etc., and we haven't achieved that ever since then. That should be a concern to us, perhaps after 4 years, more of a concern to us than it currently is, even allowing for COVID. And perhaps we ought to be thinking about an effort to put the building blocks in place to get back to a level of reassurance which we're comfortable with.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from other councillors on that?
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick point, and forgive me if I've missed this, but on the page 46, the performance measure for the audit plan, it's currently at 36%, and again, I'm just looking at where we are. We're halfway through the year now. To me, that looks like we're slightly falling behind. Most of the actual days on the completed items have overrun the plan days. It's just... I'm looking for some confidence, I suppose, in do we have the ability to catch those up, and are we likely to complete on date? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't the full two quarters. So since the writing of this report, we have issued another final. We've got another report at draft stage. So actually, you would be more like 50% now. It's just that we're not, the Charnwood reporting timetable isn't quite in line with the quarters. To be honest, the way the audit works, I wouldn't expect to have 100% of the audit plan delivered by the end of the year, by the 31st of March. There is always a little bit of carryover. We're usually looking more like 85% is what my aim, and I would be okay with 85 to 90%. As I say, that is a movable feast as well, so we've already discussed today, where there's another review that we're likely to be adding on to that audit plan. So again, that will change our performance as we add extra audits on. I've not got any concerns in the way that we're progressing through our work at the moment.
Thank you. Okay, so we've noted that, and I guess what we've suggested is that we'll monitor in terms of policy procedures and training and come to another decision on that next time, obviously guided by internal audit with any future audits that you're doing in the meantime, if it continues to be an issue. And possibly if officers could kind of remind everybody of the need to make sure policies and procedures are reviewed and up to date. Thank you. I noticed during that Mark joined us. Hello, Mark.
Yes, hello. Sorry. I am here.
That's okay. Good to see you. Hear you. Sorry, we can't see you at all there. So if we move on, are we all happy with the outcome of item 5? Yeah. Okay, lovely. So if we move on to item 6, risk management. Simon, it's over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think most of the report is self-explanatory, but I will just explain actually in response to the internal audit report. So clearly there was a number of recommendations. We were essentially halfway through the sort of reporting and development cycle. So what this report reflects here is a report prepared under the sort of old rules and the old regime. So I think we concluded we didn't want to change horses midstream, but if you would have reflected on the internal report and responses, they've all been accepted. So the next risk report the committee receives will have been done, having taken those internal audit recommendations on board. I think most of the key risks are pretty much similar to what we've had before. I think the one that certainly struck me is the one around the Environmental Services Bill. That's a very, very, very significant potential issue for us. I think with the bill overall and sort of the public headlines won't really be around the effect on local government, so probably more around the sort of COP conference coming up. But there are some very key financial risks to us from things within that. So the principal financial effect is our inability to charge for garden waste, which would result as being approximately, or we estimate, about £700,000 short of income in 2022-23. The way our waste services are structured in terms of billing, and then 1.4 million in 23-24. So that's very, very significant indeed. And that assumes that government will fund us also for the additional costs that would be incurred should all the elements of the Environment Bill come to pass. And in broad terms, for us, the big impacts there are the requirement to collect food waste, which is expensive, and also to collect recyclates in a different way. So rather than one commingled stream, there would need to be a number of streams. So that is one I'd probably draw to the committee's attention as being a particularly large risk that's come to pass in more recent months, and become more apparent in recent months. We'll know more, I think, in the new year when that bill passes through into law. Is I think it's due. Councillor Hunt might know better. I think January, February, March time, I think we're due to have a better view on quite how that will pan out.
Chair, you won't know. May I declare an interest? I didn't realise it would be applicable at this stage, but now that Simon has mentioned this, I need to declare I'm also the Member of Parliament for Loughborough.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. it's good to hear, Simon, that I look forward to seeing a new version based on internal audit recommendations of the risk register in the next meeting. And I hope it's not too hard work to get it to that. I'm sure it won't be.
I'm sure Helen will be fine with it. Thanks.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions?
Thank you. I just have a general point, really, around financial bits. I don't know if you referenced it in the point six about the ISR, whatever it is, six about the rubbish, the waste. And it's really a general issue. Throughout the risk register, one of the things I note is that the financial risks are nearly always financial losses. And we don't necessarily have an understanding of the scale of a loss that would come to the committee on the risk register. So if it's 100,000, probably doesn't appear. If it's 1 million, probably does. But we don't really have a guideline on where something should sit before it comes. So somebody somewhere's making a judgment on that, which I'm okay with. But we don't have anything on the not spending money side. And we have other places on the risk register where we talk about reputational damage, for whether data systems to not be accessible. We have reputational damage as the risk, and workflows, etc. But we can underspend by £1 million, and we don't consider that in the risk register. There's nothing about that side of the finances which appears in the risk register. And over a number of years, had huge issues with underspend on the general fund. I know we've had a year where we didn't underspend on it, and capital particularly, where that's been an ongoing issue. But because it doesn't really appear in the psyche of everybody, it doesn't appear on the risk register, so it doesn't get as much attention as it might do if it were here. Because I've seen the same line in the reports, unfortunately, for a lot of years about we're going to work harder to do better capital spend. And 5 years down the line, 6 years I've been on council now, can I say it's better? You might tell me it is. From my perspective, from the numbers, would I say it's better? I'd struggle to say that. And I'm sorry to say that, but I'd struggle to say that. And that's not because I'm attacking anybody. I just struggle to say I've seen the same line every year, but I'd struggle to see in the numbers that we've improved in that. So I think we need to come up with a way that the downside of finance, the not spending it in the right way, focuses in the risk register. Because I think it is a risk. It's only because it's not out there publicly that year after year we might not have completed these projects. In the general fund, the budget's been less fragile over the years than it perhaps should be because of underspend that's carried over, and that's been a saviour of the budget balancing. And I'm still extremely nervous. I took the wrath of my own group because I wouldn't vote for the budget this year, and I took a huge amount of flak for that. But I abstained on that at the time. It's the first time in 6 years I've done that. But that's my general sense again. I want it to be better, and I'm sure we all do, and I'm trying to find the leverage to get something done, because saying it hasn't done it, trying to lobby other people hasn't got it done for me. And I'm wondering if by getting it into the risk register, some of these things, because it is a risk to us, we can develop the change that people like me would like to see, rather than just trying to lead a one-person furrow of things I understand, and it doesn't go anywhere.
So there's probably a couple of things. One is on the capital programme. I think that is a risk. I think, I guess it is a judgment call, but that's dealt with at a corporate level, at a service level rather than a corporate and strategic level. So it is a risk. And it is recognised. I think in terms of delivery of our capital programmes, it's an ongoing struggle. And actually, going back to some of the previous comments we've had around the project management, and that's actually one reason why SLT want more visibility around the capital programme and asset management to reflect that. So we've there are one or two projects that we're sort of struggling with. Generally, there's the issue around some of the capital, some of the delivery, how much of a risk it is. If we don't, I think there is a risk certainly around the HRA and delivery of that capital programme, which has been challenging around contractors. The risk is that the maintenance doesn't happen to the schedule that we believe it should, the other side of that is the money doesn't go to waste, it's still there. So it's actually the challenge is mobilising the contracts to deliver against that. But there are, you know, it is fair to say there are issues around that. There are some big, very big financial uncertainties we have. So there's a lot of volatility around and a lot of uncertainty. Maybe it doesn't necessarily flow through this, but any of those members who are on the budget scrutiny panel, they're something that we will go through next week, actually. So I believe Councillor Parsons is on that. So you will get, even if it's not in this forum, I think we will at least be able to have a discussion on some of those big risks and volatility. Certainly, the underspends within the general fund at a controllable level, I unfortunately, I suspect those days are rather now behind us. There are other areas which do produce underspend, so particularly around some of the volatility around business rates and how things flow through that particularly extremely complicated calculation. So, there is a lot of volatility there, which I will acknowledge, but there will be an opportunity to go through that with the budget scrutiny panel, and maybe that's something that we'll link back through to here in due course.
Thank you, Simon. Comment from my perspective, I guess, is that as an audit committee, we're concerned about the risk of the organisation not achieving its objectives, and underspends form part of that, significant ones. That, you know, if we do have those on an ongoing basis, the organisation presumably wouldn't achieve its overall objectives. So I think we are kind of covering it within what we consider within the audit committee. Thank you.
Press the button here. Right. It is my nature, actually, just to read between the lines. And I just want to make sure that reading between these lines, I don't find something unpleasant. Well, when we go to page 63, Strategic Risk Register, if you go to the second column, risk, the terminology is inadequate business continuity, inadequate civil contingency, failure to respond appropriately to major incidents, significant reduction in external funding, environment bill, financial hardship. And then on the right side, you see red. Now, looking at this, what I read between the lines is actually, there are so many strategic risks here, and there's not enough money. So what is the risk to go towards the council tax to fill the gap?
Very low indeed, because the rules, which can be varied year on year, but I would still thoroughly expect us to be covered by the council tax capping rules. So, in terms of I've got an issue with it, with my section 151 hat on. But actually, our ability to increase council tax is very, very restricted due to the capping rules. If we were in a very, if there is a very, very significant civil contingency, then the government has something called, I believe, the Belwin scheme, which does allow us to access money on an emergency basis to cover that. So it would be it is difficult, but in that event, what we would do is keep a separate ledger of all the expenditure that was incurred. So obviously we've had COVID, but I guess if it was something more locally, and the government has given us COVID support as a sector, but if it was something more locally and maybe realistically in Charnwood, like a very, very severe flood, then once we'd incurred a certain level of expenditure, we can incur the Belwin rules, record our expenditure separately, and maybe recover monies on that basis. So that is an option already available to us. And more generally, rather than putting up council tax very significantly, I believe what would happen is the government would step in and either assist us or, if depending on to what extent it was deemed to be our responsibility for inadequate management, they would potentially take us over as a council and put us in special measures as per Northamptonshire. I'd very much to hope that that wouldn't expect and hope that would happen. But you know, if there is something something of a very, very major nature, then very, very difficult to second guess what might be the ultimate outcome. But in terms of council tax, I don't believe that is a risk the way we sit at the moment.
So I'm sorry, I guess just to continue with this and close it, so we are confident actually there is money in the pot to convert the reds into ambers.
To the extent, at a very big level, then yes, that's the case, because I'm sure that if very big amounts were required, then the government would help us out. I think some of the red ones, so things like some of the issues are maybe things that money can't necessarily solve. So, you know, major data leak or a major service outage for an extended period of time, you know, money can help, but wouldn't necessarily solve immediately. So you know, if we have a big flood, however much money that we've got, if the flood waters are still there, then there's a limit to what we can do. But yeah, I wouldn't suggest at a major level that money would be a barrier. And of course, we do, you know, that's why we do maintain a certain level of reserves, you know, literally for a rainy day.
Thank you, Simon. I think it's about making sure that, as an authority, we're aware of those risks and we have procedures in place to try and mitigate them should it happen. Thank you, Simon. Any other questions? Okay. Is everybody happy to note the report? Lovely, thank you. If we move on to item 7, Council's use of Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act. And if I hand over to Adrian to introduce this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Long-standing members of the committee may not be surprised to learn that, yet again, we haven't used our RIPA powers. I think the only thing to update you on generally is in the last paragraph of the report, I mentioned the inspection. We've now had the inspection report. I'm pleased to say there's nothing serious, but perhaps quite ironically, bearing in mind some of the comments of the committee earlier on, they have pointed out a couple of policy updates that are required. The level of them, for example, they are no longer referred to as the Office of Surveillance Commissioners. They are now the Investigatory Powers Commissioner's Office, so our policy needs to be updated to reflect that change. And also there's a very technical update required in relation to juvenile covert human intelligence sources, which we have never used and are incredibly unlikely to ever use, but we will update the policy as recommended. And again, perhaps ironically, they have recommended that we need to refresh our RIPA training for officers and members. But again, to put that into context, this is something we have not used for over a decade, so we will provide some training, but it will be quite light touch, I would suggest. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Any comments from anybody? Any questions? No? Happy to agree? Lovely, thank you. And item 8, this is now over to you, Mark, on the External Audit Progress Report and update.
Thank you. And please do tell me if you can't hear me, and I'll speak up. Absolutely fine. So again, thank you for allowing me to dial in today. So that is very helpful, and apologies for being a little bit late, but I was on another committee, and they but let me be very polite and say they had some rather challenging issues with their audit, and report that to you. So please let that be some positives for the committee. The progress is set out with you. I think the timeline is probably the most important one to draw on. But before I get there, I think the first page talks about the significant financial statement risks that we identified as part of planning. So it's for me to give you some assurance there that as our planning has developed to this point, there's no new audit risks, there's no new matters that we need to bring to your attention. And that's a positive form of assurance. A couple of areas that we are finding across our clients, just for your information. First is around pensions, where we've got an indication that the pension fund movements have been quite substantial. The authorities have obtained an updated valuation to go into the account, so there will be a movement from what was in the draft through to the finals. It doesn't have an impact on your general fund, but because it involves big numbers, I would expect to see that come through. The other area that we found some challenges elsewhere is around the financial reporting disclosures around valuation of land and buildings. But we will haven't commenced that work yet, but we'll work with the authority to make sure that comes out with the right result. Aside from that, as you can see, the timeline's ongoing. There's a couple of other aspects that are affecting the timeline. One is that we still haven't received what we call the instructions to carry out the work on the whole of government accounts. And that means that we won't be in a position to what we call certify the audit. We haven't received those from the National Audit Office. And until they're done, we don't know what they're going to ask us to do. And the second area is the what's called the annual auditor's report. The annual auditor's report is new this year. Official guidance says it has to be completed by the 30th of September. So you'll see in the appendix we said, well, actually, we're not going to complete it by the 30th of September. That's consistent with all of our clients. So there's nothing ordinary in that. It's just the guidance that was issued at the time was pre-COVID. So, and it hasn't been updated as a result. I don't foresee any particular issues at this point in time preventing us getting to the reporting deadline, which we hope to have complete by November. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Mark. Any questions from anybody?
Hello, Mark. Councillor Parsons here. Just one quick question. Do you think by next year we're likely to return to the same timing cycle for our audit cycle annually and things will pull back, or are we likely to be running the sort of delay we've had this year? We're late with our accounts, we're late with the audit certificate, dot, dot, dot. Is that likely to go on for another year, or are we likely to pull that back?
I'll speak a little bit more generally, but the overall answer is no, I don't think so. And the reason being, one of the reasons why we are where we are this year is because what we have seen across all of our clients, across all the local government, across the health sector, is that we're actually starting to see the accumulation of the impact that COVID has had in non-frontline. So we're seeing the impact of how much work finance teams, for example, have had to do in terms of grant allocations and adaptions. And it's just having a cumulative effect to get to this point. So aspects like the compliance aspects, like producing a set of financial statements, a number of our clients this year have deferred them through because they have reprioritised. I think the statutory deadline for publishing a set of accounts will still be the 30th of September 2022, but I very much doubt there will be that many authorities in that position because once you get to this point now, it takes time to claw all of that back. And the other point is that in terms of you may or may not be aware of the outcome of there was the Redmond review into the work of public sector as well as some work from MHCLG, and there's a gap in terms of auditors. There's not enough auditors, and trying to get the work done in a compressed timetable is not achievable this year, and therefore will have an impact next year.
So should we review our work plan and meeting cycle now to reflect the fact that we're unlikely to catch it up, or should we plot the work plan and cycle as if it was going to be a normal year and then we move things, which is kind of what we've done during this last year? Should we, because we're about to do work plan, I'm not saying we're going to do it right this minute because it's really only just struck me in the comments that you've made about the fact we're likely to see a similar work cycle year and delays again. So should we plan and prepare for that, or put in place the normal cycle and then know that there are delays coming?
I would suggest that you keep things as normal. The reporting deadline for production of accounts will be the 31st of July of next year, and we may well work to a 30th of September next year. What we have found this year, to be transparent about things, is a lot of our clients initially said they'd be ready and ready to go early, but we found we had a very large number of our clients say very late that they had to shift the deadline. So we are going to be a little bit more direct with all of our clients about, you know, if you're going to put it in there, we have to resource for that period, and it's very difficult for us. You know, we've got 26 authorities in the East Midlands, so once one shifts last minute, it's very difficult to move things around. So for yourselves, who have been helpful and weren't in that group, by the way, I think it would just be useful to keep your timetable as it is, and we do aim to work to that timetable, but we've got to go through this year before we can confirm what it will be next year.
Thank you, Mark. Any other questions? No, so we're happy to agree Mark's report. Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Much appreciated. Okay, if we move on to item 9, that very same work programme, and I'll hand over to Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the regular work programme report that comes to you so you can keep track of what's scheduled for forthcoming meetings. Three things I want to point out, I think, that, and they are the last three items on the report at the very end. The first one is the annual IT health check, which we have slipped from this meeting to February 2022, and perhaps the committee will not be surprised that's because of COVID. So we've not been able to arrange for that to be done. So we are proposing to schedule it to come to you in February. The following two items both relate to external audit, and the future of local public audit. I think the title of that needs to be changed to appointment of external auditors. We are due in the cycle to be thinking about the next external auditor appointment. So in order to meet the timescales, what we need to do is to bring a report to you at the November meeting, recommending that we join the national arrangement as we did 5 years ago, and that will then be a recommendation from yourselves if you're minded to agree, though, to participate in that national pooled arrangement, to recommend to council in the new year that we go down that route. The other option is to do our own local appointment process, which is quite complex and difficult, which is why I think the officer recommendation will be that we join the national arrangement. And the final item on the work programme, the policy for the engagement of external auditors for non-audit work, has been sitting there for a very long time. You'll see the policy was agreed in March 2013. To me, Chair, if the committee are minded to do so, it would seem sensible to bring that forward for a review at the same time. So we've proposed to schedule both of those items potentially for the November meeting, if that's okay with the committee, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. Is everybody happy with that? Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Any questions for Adrian on any points raised? No. Lovely. Thank you. So can we confirm that we're happy to accept that? Not the contents. Thank you very much. Okay, we're kind of getting towards the end now. Any issues during the meeting that the committee wishes to forward to scrutiny committee? Nope. Okay, thank you. So item 10, exempt information. So we need to, we haven't got any members of the public, exclude them. I still need to go through it. During consideration of the following items, on the grounds it will involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Local Government Act 1972. And it's considered that the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest in disclosing the information. Do I have a seconder? Thank you. Can you confirm you're for this proposal? Thank you.